You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. It is Friday, as the immortal Rebecca Black once said. Friday, got to get down on Friday.
Who's Rebecca Black?
She, remember that viral video from like 13 years ago, that horrible, horrible song that teenage girl named Rebecca Black sang about the show Friday?
No.
I'll have to have Jonesy find it.
About the show Friday?
No, about the day Friday.
Oh.
It was really, really, really terrible. It was so terrible it went viral.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I don't know.
I'll play it for you during the break. It was back in like the 2012, 2013 area, back in that bit of the calendar. So how are you today, Seth Payne?
I'm good.
How are you
feeling? I'm happy and grateful that the Rockets allowed me to get to sleep earlier last night.
That's nice of them.
I got the feeling that this was not going to be one of those games where the Rockets built a 30-point lead and then squandered it. They're just that Warriors team is such trash, and they just don't match up.
Yeah.
It's nice to see Draymond Green being relegated back to where he should be relegated, which is like, oh, hey, damn good basketball player, but come on.
Yeah.
Come on, top five in the league or whatnot.
If he's your 1D, then you're a pretty good team. When he's your 1A, you are this year's Golden State Warriors, and I've never been a big Andrew Wiggins guy either. Mm-hmm. So this is fun to have the two of those guys, two, you know, max or near max players who shouldn't be exposed for what they are. Those are your two best players. That's what your team looks like.
Russell Westbrook was ejected in the fourth quarter for a bunch of nonsense. And it looks, if you're watching the highlights, I went back and watched again. At first it looks like he's talking to Klay Thompson. But he's not. He's yapping. Some little bro in the second row, some backup, was yapping at Russell Westbrook. Mm. I guess trying to get some clout or something. And Russell Westbrook had his head turned toward Klay Thompson, but he was talking to the younger guy. So it wasn't beef between Klay and Russell. It was Russell and some guy that he probably doesn't even know.
I'll keep an eye on the TV. We have the, as always, have the highlights, have SportsCenter going on in here. So I'll keep an eye on it. But
yeah.
I don't know who it was. But I honestly admire their MO. That's what you do. You punch up.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's how you get some, like you said, clout, some notoriety. You start yelling at Russell Westbrook, and people are going to know who you are.
And then as Westbrook is leaving the court, Kevon Looney does a bit of a passive-aggressive, didn't move out of the way, which you might say, okay, Kevon Looney's standing his ground, but Westbrook had his head down. He was just trying to get out of there, and Kevon Looney was standing in his way.
Yeah.
He's
another one of these guys that's fortified because he plays on a team with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and last year Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Like one of these guys who gets a little, kind of like those Bulls back in the day where the Bulls win three straight championships, and then when they're breaking up the team, these guys all get big contracts because they happen to be on the same team as Michael Jordan.
He did tear up Capella's butt last year. I mean, that's...
He did.
I mean, that's,
thanks for pooping on my point.
We'll never forget. Well, Capella.
Yeah.
Capella had that lung infection, and I think that I think many of us have been too harsh on Capella just because he's the guy that decided he wanted to start talking smack about how better they were better than the Warriors and whatnot.
Yeah.
And just because he's the guy that was a vast disappointment in the playoffs.
Right.
Maybe it was a little bit of that lung infection and his inability to recover from it.
So we thank the Rockets for taking care of the Warriors very, very early in the night. We got to go to sleep last night, and that was that's always beneficial when you're getting up at 4 in the morning. The big news yesterday, and you know how I know it's big news, Seth, is because they just showed a headshot during a game of J.J. Watt on the intro to SportsCenter.
Yeah.
Because J.J. Watt had a big take yesterday on the big news, which was the owners approved the new CBA. I feel like that's one of those things that when people read the headline, they're going to go, oh, there's a new CBA in place, which is exactly what the owners want. There are new parameters for a CBA that the two sides have discussed, and the owners have approved what they think their version of the CBA should look like, and they've now handed it over to the players to vote on. Now, was not unanimous amongst owners. I'm only taking that to assume that, as always, the Bengals voted against whatever it was. It was 31-1, and the Bengals, I don't know that to be true, but it feels like the Bengals always vote against whatever all the owners want to do. But the owners made the PR chess move of tweeting out, handing fact sheets of the CBA that they voted on over to reporters who would then tweet out pictures of it so that the public could completely consume it as if it were approved. And there's a conference call scheduled for today with player reps where the player side of this thing is going to vote on it. And if J.J. Watt, Seth, is any indication, this thing is not going to get approved by the players.
Yeah, what did J.J. tweet?
J.J. tweeted, I'll give you the exact words. It was a very brief tweet. It was a very brief tweet, and it was
a
big, strong
pass.
Opinion. Yes,
hard
he
no.
said a hard no on that proposed CBA.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, if you look at the NFL CBA versus the other two major leagues, the baseball and basketball, players get about 50% of the revenue. In football, this CBA would give the players 48% of the revenue. And then, but this is what the owners love to do. They say, hey, we're ahead of the curve on this. And look, if you add an extra game, we'll give you even a little bit more. And then we'll have a bunch of other incentives in here that if you play really, really good, then you'll get even a little smidgen bit more money. And I think the NFL players are largely saying, all right, look, this is the league that takes the most physical abuse and punishment. And we've got the smallest slice of the pie when it comes to percentage that the players get. Let's make this thing fitty-fitty. How we like that? It's not going to happen, but maybe they can get it a little bit higher.
I guess as a former player, when I see a tweet like this from J.J. Watt, I want to ask you, how reflective of the rest of the players is a tweet like that from J.J. Watt, and or how influential is a publicly stated opinion like that on other players?
I think it varies. This is the problem. You have to remember it's a 1,400 person association, and there are multiple different. It's like any other body that votes. It's not like you're going to have unanimity every single time you vote. So, for one, I don't know like what JJ's particular bone of contention is with this particular offering, and I don't know, you know, I don't know how much sway the various reps have.
I could guess one of them, and yeah. It's this. The, you know, 17-game season is part of this CBA, starting in at the earliest, starting in 2021. The way that they're going to pay players who are already under contract for the new 17-week season, I don't know if you saw this, it's they're going to pay them for their normal 16-week game checks, and then for a 17th week, they're going to, basically, you're going to get a 17th game check up to a maximum of $250,000, which is awesome if you're the proletariat in the league, if you're like 80% of the league, 250
right.
grand is probably more than what your game check is. 250 grand is way less than what a game check is for J.J. Watt.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's a really dumb.
J.J. Watt's game checks are like $1 million.
There's no way the owners expect the players to accept that. Especially now, you ask how much sway do they have. This is the important thing. The veteran players and the good players have the loudest voices and the most sway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you vote on everything and the player rep then votes. It's a representative democracy. Each team has a player rep. But the older guys in the league are running the show for the most part, and a lot of those guys are the ones that are being asked almost directly, hey, look, here's the deal. You're going to get an extra game check. Oh, really? So like it'd be like the equivalent of 1/16th of what I already make?
Right.
No, it's going to be much, much less.
Stop
in
it,
fact.
Silly. you're so silly.
That also raises a whole bunch of questions because the first extra game wouldn't be until 2022. Is that when they said?
The earliest would be 2021. They don't know yet.
2021.
Yeah, the earliest would be 2021.
So you're going to start negotiating contracts without any real idea exactly how this extra game is going to affect the total pool of money.
Right.
How do you spread all that money out? I think it's good that the owners got this proposal approved quickly because now you can get into actual negotiating.
Yes.
The biggest obstacle and the most confusing thing is going to be if you add an extra game, how does that affect everything else? The players and agents have to figure out, okay, how much is this going to increase revenue and what does that make my value? You know, do I just go ahead and tack on 1/17th of whatever we are and go there? I think the owners probably have the advantage here when it comes to if you pass this deal and then you start negotiating contracts and free agency and whatnot, the owners probably have a much better feel for what the TV money is going to be like moving forward and how much this is going to affect gross revenue.
Just real quick, if people are wondering, okay, so how does this thing get approved? It's been approved by the owners. How does it get approved on the player side? There's a conference call scheduled for later today where there's expected to be a vote on it. 2/3 of the player reps, So two-thirds of 32 is 22-ish. So if 22 of the 32 player reps approve the CBA, it then goes to the entire player constituency, and all they need is a simple majority. They just need 50.1% of players to then approve it, and then there will be a new CBA in place, which would be kind of nice to not have a work stoppage after this coming season.
Right, and that's for everybody to be clear. There will be no work stoppage this season. Right. This is all trying to prevent something from happening next season.
Yeah, they're trying to be out in front of it by a year. One topic we have not really discussed with the Astros, will there be a mental effect on Jose Altuve this upcoming season? One future Hall of Famer thinks that it's a distinct possibility, and we'll hear from him next.
I'm mad at this guy, the pitcher that came out talking about it, and let me tell you why. Oh, after you make your money, after you get your ring, you decide to talk about it? Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why you didn't say, I don't want to be no part of? Oh, now. So you look like a snitch. You know what I mean? Why you got to talk about it after? Why don't you, that's my problem, you know. Why nobody say anything while it was going on?
I'm not a big jersey wearer, Seth. I own one baseball jersey. It's a David Ortiz Red Sox jersey.
Oh, really?
I thought about wearing it today.
You're going to get up at the Astros 2020 World Series Victory Parade and said, this is our city.
This is a, yeah, and I'm going to curse like he did back in the day, too. I'm not going to be governed. The FCC is not going to govern me on that day.
You're not going to censor me or censure me, Buster Olney.
Is it weird? We'll get to more Big Poppy in a second. Is it weird that the Astros are kind of attached at the hip with the Red Sox right now?
Oh, yeah.
It feels like it's 28 against 2 right now. Like it's the Battle of the Bastards with Jon Snow, and it's the Red Sox and the Astros with 28 other teams charging at them on horses right now.
I've already seen a little bit of deflection out of some Red Sox fans in that, hey, we caught this virus from you. It was Alex Cora. Down there at patient zero, and then he brought his dastardly scheme up to Boston.
Whatever. How quickly we forget about the Apple Watches.
Well, the Apple Watches. Now, you have to remember, most people in baseball now are also saying, oh, it was an innocent Apple Watch. Yeah. That's a lot different than banging on a trash can.
Well, it is.
The Apple Watch. We're talking about a high-tech scheme where you were banging on trash cans, bro.
They have a point. Sophistication level, it is a different thing. To have a high-tech Apple Watch on your wrist versus banging on a garbage can like a gorilla.
Wow.
In the clubhouse hallway.
Like a gorilla. Wow, you say Boston was using Apple Watches and then the Astros took it up a notch, huh? What were they using? Satellites? Trash cans.
Yeah, bats. Blunt force trauma.
Hold on, they were Rubbermaid.
It wasn't some tinny nonsense. Old school Oscar the Grouch type stuff. These were the ones that you get like in the really nice part of Walmart. So Big Poppy met with the media yesterday. That was Big Poppy talking about Mike Fiers being a snitch. He talked a lot about Jose Altuve, and he did mention that let's hear him talk about Jose Altuve and the possibility of guilt by association.
I heard Correa the other day say to Kenny Rosenthal that Altuve had nothing that had to do with he because he don't like it. And let me tell you, I believe that. But let me tell you what the problem is. Just for being part of the group that was doing it, you are guilty as much as everybody else.
Yeah, and this is what Payne and Pendergast are railing against. This is what we've made our life's work, to get the stain off of Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It'd be like if, let's see, what's another horrible group of people in history or just in
the cast
sports?
Of Friends.
The cast of Friends.
People, yeah.
So it'd be like if you're just one of the extras or something on Friends.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I was just there collecting a paycheck. I got like $150 a day.
Right. The funny guy who lived upstairs. I like that guy.
Yeah.
Stop.
Small Wonder. If you're on the cast of Small Wonder.
Small Wonder.
What about if you were a writer? You're a writer on Small Wonder, the syndicated sitcom.
Right.
And for the rest of your career, people will be like, wow, he did great. Oh, did you hear he was a writer on Sophie's Choice, too? And somebody's going to bring up, yeah, but you know what else he was on? Small Wonder.
Right.
And then, bam, you're stained.
Guilt by association. One more from Big Poppy, and this is what I wanted to get to, Seth. The possibility that this whole thing could mess with the head of a great hitter like Jose Altuve. Here's Poppy on that.
Altuve, to me, might be the best hitter in the game. But look at where he got caught into the mug that he's into now. I don't know how he's going to be able to deal with all the trash coming from fans and everybody every time he step on the plate. So if you might see him this year struggle, I don't think it's going to be because he missing knowing what's coming. Your mind play a big role in the game.
This is where I've downplayed just how much aggressive opposing fans are going to have an effect on the Astros. But I will concede that we may have never seen anything like what the Astros are about to see. So I can't say with certainty that it's just going to turn into white noise at some point. In my mind, I almost felt like, wow, with an entire stadium railing against the entire team the whole game, it'll just turn into white noise. I don't know. The bullpen guys I'm actually concerned about most.
Hit with things?
Well, bullpen guys are used to dealing with a certain amount of abuse, but maybe not as steady and constant and aggressive as they're going to. And who knows, maybe, you know, ballpark security is not going to be quite as tight.
Right.
Ballpark security might say, you know what, maybe in the past we would have escorted a guy away, but screw these guys.
Let me ask you just a very basic question. Have you gotten nervous at all that in listening to the interviews, in hearing from guys from other teams, forget about the abuse from the fans for a second. Are you nervous at all? And even forget about the fact that, yeah, even in 2019, they still hit really, really well. Are you worried at all that maybe they did get a bump from this whole thing? Like that at the end of the day, like this whole garbage can thing, that somehow now that it's out there in public, you know, it's one thing that you were doing it in secret and you're not doing it anymore and nobody knows about it. Now that it is a thing that's a topic that you're hearing about, it's being hammered home every day that you use these garbage cans. Are you worried that somehow that maybe there was a bump up that they got in 2017?
That's where it's interesting. And I know Branham and Sterner have been arguing about this daily about just because Branham has, I think, a valid argument that there's a chance that this was, in some ways, when it did help guys, they didn't realize that it was also hurting them at the same time. Now, with Marwin Gonzalez, it's hard to argue that this did not help Marwin Gonzalez.
He's the one guy. Yeah.
But with other guys, including Carlos Beltran, perhaps, the overall effect wasn't good. I think there's two things about that. One, it may have helped them versus certain pitchers a lot. And maybe it hurt them versus other pitchers, but the certain pitchers that it helped them against are the ones that are going to be most upset by this. Clayton Kershaw was too lazy to change signs, for instance.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm blaming the victim. And two, though, is this. Jonathan Lucroy was interviewed, and he said something that was the first thing that kind of rattled my confidence, perhaps, in just how good the Astros are as pitchers. Because let's remember, one of the best things they do is their pitch selection,
right,
their judgment at the plate. This is what Lucroy said.
Lucroy, a catcher for several teams.
Lucroy, who has both been hit in the head by a bat when he was with the Rangers. Yep. That was his fault. And then barreled into by Jake Mariznick.
Trucked by Mariznick, yeah.
Not necessarily his fault. Right. So, quote, it was crazy some of the pitches they would take. It was like, man, these guys are some of the best hitters I've ever seen. It all made sense when I found out how they were doing it. Then it was like, what are we going to do? I was with Oakland, and we had let MLB know. He was a teammate of Mike Fiers.
Yep.
And they just called and said something. They didn't go through the whole investigation. It wasn't until Fiers came out publicly that they went and looked at it really hard. But it's that first sentence, it was crazy some of the pitches they would take.
Yeah.
And we've heard that from various pitchers, the way they'd say, how is this guy laying off all these pitches?
That, to me, seems to be the big benefit, is you know whether it's a fastball or an off-speed pitch. And if it's an off-speed pitch and it's at a count where it makes sense to lay off on it, you lay off on it.
In a lot of pitchers. And again, the human's memory of things and the way they experience stuff is notoriously fallible. So I don't put too much stock into some pitchers saying, well, it was unbelievable the way they were laying off of certain pitches. It could be a combination of both things. There might have been a couple instances where they were laying off some really good stuff, but it also could be that they just have really good judgment at the plate, because let's remember, this was not on the majority of at-bats that the Astros were using this.
Yeah.
It was only at certain times when they felt like they had an advantage or an edge.
I am only getting more and more jacked for this season with all of these stories and things like that. I can't wait for the season to get here. Joining us right now on the line, our radio.com NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots, now in two great tropical flavors. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. That's his show now on radio.com/home, or search Home on the radio.com app. Ross, what have you learned? Of course, Seth and I both follow you on Twitter. What have you learned about the street value of 157 pounds of weed over the last few days?
There seems to be no consensus. It's been very interesting. Some people have had it at, you know, close to $1 million. Others say it's a lot less than that because it's garbage weed from Mexico that you'd be selling wholesale. I will say this. I know that a lot of people smoke marijuana. I know it's legal in a number of states, but wow. I mean, that's about as much of a response as I've ever gotten to any tweet when I asked how much money that would be. There are a lot of people very knowledgeable about the subject,
Yeah. And
there are a lot of people that get very defensive regarding their knowledge of the subject. Like people are coming to verbal blows in my mentions debating how much it costs. I really didn't care that much.
It's a just a drive-by question.
Honestly, Ross, I've long felt this. I feel like weed would have been legalized 20 years ago if the most vocal 5% of pot smokers had just shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Because there's the most vocal and yet seemingly the most burnt out seem to get the loudest voices, and sometimes it gets annoying.
Well, hey, Seth. Welcome to the world, man. Welcome to America. I mean, that's politics. That's everything where the people to the far left, the far right are by far the loudest, and that's whose voices get heard the most. And so everybody on one side of the topic thinks that everybody on the other side of the topic feels the way they do, which isn't the case. That's just the way the world is now. I'll say this. I really hope somebody gets the chance to interview Greg Robinson. You're talking about a 27-year-old guy who's made $29 million, made $6.4 million this season, the 2019 season. And 7 weeks later, he's got 157 pounds of pot in duffel bags in the back of his truck in El Paso. Like, he should have to go, his punishment, rather than jail, he should have to go to every college in the country's sociology 101 class, sit down and let the professor say, "So Greg, where did it all go wrong?" But like, tell me, like honestly, like I don't know, is it his parents, is it his upbringing, is he a bad guy, is he just not smart? Like I am fascinated by this. Pretty clearly I think his buddy probably hasn't made money and is like, "Hey, can you front the money?" It's like, "Hey Greg, buddy, you know you can just front the money without actually being the dude driving the truck, right?" Like, I mean, the whole thing's amazing.
Ross, you know how this is, though, because, like, you've spent enough time. In the NFL, usually what happens over time is, like, no matter whatever negative stereotypes guys have about athletes, for the most part, by the time guys get to the NFL, if they can make it in the NFL, there's kind of a narrowing out. There's a screening process where the guys that just can't get along in society, for the most part, don't make it. But every now and then, there's a guy that's so physically talented and yet also so stupid. Like, to a level that doesn't have anything to do with Wonderlic or college GPA or anything like that. But they've just got that spacey look in their eyes. The teammate that I had a conversation with about, well, he couldn't understand why if bleach could kill viruses, why you couldn't just drink bleach to kill the AIDS virus. That guy is the guy I'm thinking of.
I demand you tell me his name during the next break.
No, you know what? You know what I think it is, Seth? I think it's really simple. His buddy from college hasn't made any money and wants to live the life, and peer pressure, no matter how old you are, I think peer pressure. Come on, man. You made $29 million. I just need a little help, just this one help. And Greg went along with it. My guess gave in to try to help out his buddy, and now we see where he is.
Yeah, it's a wild story. Ross Tucker joining us on the program. Ross, you had some pretty strong takes on Joe Burrow on Twitter as well. Is Joe Burrow, for those who don't know, the highly likely number one overall pick in the draft from Southern Ohio, so there's a lot of connection that people are connecting the dots that he may want to play for the Bengals, although these tweets that he's been putting out, Ross, seem to indicate otherwise. Is he getting bad advice from people right now just in terms of how he's handling his business?
I think he is. And by the way, I am all for any player, any human being really, but any player doing whatever they think is best for their career. You only get one shot at it. So if he doesn't want to go to the Bengals because he doesn't think that they're really committed to winning Super Bowls or that that's a good place for him, I'm okay with it. I probably don't love it, but I'm okay with it. What I don't really like is sort of beating around the bush. You know, like after the game, after they won the national championship, he was like, hey, I don't care, man. They're going to draft me and pay me money to play football. I'm all in. Let's do it, which I thought was great. But then he's obviously had some people in his ear, and now it's like, Joe, do you want to be the number one pick for the Cincinnati Bengals? Well, hey, listen, they have a process. I have a process. There's a long way to go. Like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't understand it. Like, I would rather him just say, heck yeah, I want to be the number one pick for the Bengals, or say, no, I really don't. I really don't think that's the best franchise for me. I don't want to play for the Bengals. If they draft me, I won't go there. But, like, he's kind of beating around the bush, and it's pretty clear at this point that he doesn't really want to be there. He just won't come out and say that. I'm not a big fan of it.
How are you feeling? And this is what's been strange to me, I guess, is I think that Nolan Naraki kind of scared so many people off of being overly harsh about prospects that this year, for whatever reason, it seems like nobody's pointing out any of the negatives of Tua Tagovailoa or Joe Burrow, and almost just like laying the carpet out to where, of course, these guys are going to be awesome NFL quarterbacks. Where in previous years, there would be weirdos on TV screaming about their lack of arm strength and whatnot. Like, how confident do you feel in both those guys?
It's a really good question, Seth. And I talked to Greg Cosell from NFL Films about this yesterday on the Ross Tucker podcast, which, of course, like this show, is available on the radio.com app. And he had said the week before, and yesterday he even said, that Tua Tagovailoa, you know, there's people on TV that will talk about how he's got A-plus arm talent and how he's, you know, an elite athlete. And Greg made a great point, I thought, which is like, if he has A-plus arm talent, what does Matthew Stafford have?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have A-plus arm talent. Or if he's an elite athlete, what's Lamar Jackson or Russell Wilson? Like, what are we talking about here? He's a very good player. I thought it was interesting. Greg also said he was a little bit programmatic. And when I asked him if he liked Burrow or Tua better, he went Burrow without any hesitation whatsoever. And even Burrow, as well as he played, as good as he is, he's not like a perfect prospect, right? I mean, so let's say Burrow sat out the whole year and went back in next year's draft, and he's up against Trevor Lawrence. Well, you know, it depends on the year that Trevor Lawrence has, but Trevor Lawrence is bigger, faster, stronger arm. I mean, so if Trevor Lawrence has a really good year, he's literally better in all of like the physical measurable categories than Burrow, which tells you that Burrow is a heck of a player, but he's not like an elite talent, elite natural ability.
Yeah, I guess, Ross, the way I would look at it is the success of both of these guys came with some very specific conditions. It was very conditional success. Joe Burrow became successful once they brought in Joe Brady to re-architect that offense at LSU. He was not very good before that. And Tua's success largely came in games against Lambs in the SEC and FCS schools, because when he played against more elite competition, he wasn't as good. For most of his career, he's throwing into gigantic windows behind an already ready-made offensive line. Both of their success was success is always conditional to some degree, but to me, for guys who were talking about teams making the ultimate investment in being the face of a franchise, really, really conditional for both of these guys. Would you agree?
Yeah, they both also not only had excellent offensive lines, they both had three or four total freak show wide receivers. You know what I mean? I mean, they're throwing slants, and that number one for LSU is out of this world. I forget his name. Obviously, Judy and Ruggs and Smith and all the guys for Alabama, Jefferson for LSU. Like, these guys had about as good of a receiving core as you can possibly have at the college level as well. You know, that's what I think is most interesting, is they didn't appear to face that much adversity this year.
Yeah.
Obviously, other than Tua's health. And their talent of their team was better than everybody they went up against. I'll be very curious to see how they do in the NFL when that's not the case and they're not clearly better than pretty much all of their opponents.
Speaking with Ross Tucker, you can follow him on Twitter @RossTuckerNFL. Ross, when does this CBA get passed?
You know, I think and hope today, you know, the players are going to vote on it. There have been some guys that have been vocal against it. I got to tell you guys, I can't stand this topic from a social media perspective because I see all, like, CBA Twitter makes football or draft Twitter look like geniuses. I mean, CBA Twitter is a bunch of people that apparently have never been in a negotiation in their life and have nothing to lose that just sit here and say, players are getting robbed. Players are getting robbed, man. They need to just sit out. What, like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, get a clue. I personally find it very insulting to Eric Winston and all the guys that have been negotiating for 10 months on this to just sit here and just dismiss where they're at. And by the way, like, I saw Darren Revell, right, said that it's like the worst CBA he's ever seen. And I literally tweeted at Darren Revell this morning, at Ross Tucker NFL, and said, Darren, what the hell are you talking about? It's better in every single category than the one they signed in 2011. Literally, go through it line item by line item. They were getting 47%. Now they'll get 48.5%. The minimum was 89% spending, four-year windows. Now it's 90% minimum, three-year windows, which means they have to do it in those. I mean, you lose. They only have 16 padded practices the whole year. I mean, you go through it, it's better in every category. So I'm not saying they should sign it or not. I'm not saying it's a great deal or whatever. But, like, all these people that are bashing them, what are you talking about? Like, if you want to bash somebody, bash the guys that agreed to the one in 2011, because anyone that's ever actually been in a negotiation knows that then becomes the starting point. So it's not easy to get all the gains that they've gotten. And what have they really given up or given the owners? Two more playoff games and one more game in the regular season? Like, people don't realize the primary reason they'll benefit from that is the television money.
Yeah.
The players get 55% of the TV money. They benefit from that more than the owners. Like the amount of people that spout off on Twitter, it's kind of like why I don't ever tweet anything about politics, because I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, so I'm not going to. But the people, nobody got the memo on the CBA. Everybody, and by the way, I know this is going to get everybody mad at me, because everybody loves J.J. Watt, and I love J.J. Watt. And everybody already in Houston gets mad at me because they think I'm anti-Houston. I'm not at all. Love Deshaun Watson. Love Hopkins. Love J.J. Watt. I thought J.J.'s tweet was disappointing because, I don't know, Seth, is he a union rep?
He's, you know what, I was trying to confirm. I wanted to say John Weeks, a long snapper, is, but the NFLPA's website, and Ross, this is not a good look for the NFLPA, currently lists Houston's rep is Brian Cushing. Buffalo's rep is Tyrod Taylor. That's right. I said Tyrod, not Tyrod, because he hadn't yet changed it back when he was in Buffalo.
Right.
So, but it's unless something changed, I don't think it's J.J. Watt, but I got to confirm that.
Yeah, so for me, what's disappointing about that is, number one, I think it's disrespectful to the guys that have been negotiating for 10 months. There's no context with it. He just says hard no without saying why. And by the way, what happens is, because he's such a good player and he's so popular, people believe, like, oh, well, J.J. Watt doesn't like it, so I shouldn't like it. He's made over $85 million. Like, he is one of 50 guys, not one of the other 1,800, who are trying to do whatever they can to maximize the financial security they can get at the start of their lives for their families based on putting their bodies through significant harm. And I just really, really thought that was a – look, J.J. is absolutely entitled to his opinion. I thought it was a poor forum and a poor way to express whatever he doesn't like about it, because most people won't understand that he is not even close – to representative of the union at whole.
That is a great point. We'll finish it up on that. Ross Tucker, our radio.com sports NFL Insider. Insider Calls brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots. Now in two great tropical flavors. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. His show out now on radio.com/home or search home on the radio.com app. Ross, we appreciate it. Have a good show, my friend.
See you guys.
All right.
And it's Brennan Scarlett, actually. Now.
Okay.
So, and is the Texans player rep.
Boy, that might have been the point Ross just made there at the end about J.J. Watt. We've done a lot of hits with Ross Tucker throughout the football season.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been his strongest take that he's had when he's been on with us. And I've enjoyed our conversations with Ross. That point that he made is with respect to J.J.'s tweet is exactly, in terms of the brevity of it, is what I was thinking driving in this morning, which was, if you're going to do that, you've got to be a little more specific than just saying hard no, because he's right. It creates a perception. SportsCenter, when it went on the air at 6 o'clock today, one of the first things they're showing is J.J. Watt sacking somebody. They're not showing him sacking somebody. I'm assuming we don't have the sound on in here because we're doing a radio show. I'm assuming they're not talking about J.J. Watt, the football player. They're talking about J.J. Watt, the tweeter. And the point that Ross made about what I'll call the proletariat of the league, the middle class and lower class of the league, this is a CBA that's bumping up income that is material to – those guys are going to make $100,000 more a year, which is a drop in the bucket for players like J.J. Watt. It's significant for guys who are in the year for 2 or 3 years at the most.
Yep, and usually what will happen is teams will get together and they'll vote on topics, and but generally they follow the lead of the leadership on the team. And I was never there as part of a vote of a CBA, at least not when I was an older player.
It was labor peace when you were.
But you asked earlier, okay, what's it mean when JJ tweets something like this? I don't know how it affects the entire league overall. When it comes to the guys standing up and talking in a meeting room and telling guys which way they should vote, it means a lot, you know. So I would imagine if I were JJ and a lot of other players, including the rank and file, it's going to be all about the 17th game. Even if you're a player who's okay with adding the 17th game, it can't be as simple as, hey, don't worry, we'll take care of you down the road. And it gets kind of complex, all the things they have built in with all of this. But there's just, it's hard to negotiate when you don't know exactly how the new extra game, the new playoff format, and the new TV deal are going to affect the top line. You know, so you're trying to kind of take care of the bottom line. And guys are going to be negotiating deals over the next year or two before a lot of this stuff kicks in. And I think that's where some of the uncertainty comes.
So Brennan Scarlett is the player rep for the Texans. And to approve this CBA, there are obviously 32 player reps, one for each team. Two-thirds of them need to vote yes on it to approve it and then put it to a vote of the entire constituency of players, you know, like an election, the popular vote, if you will. To get this approved, you need two-thirds of the player reps to vote yes, and then they just need a simple majority of the overall players to vote yes on it. What is Brennan Scarlett doing, right? Is Brennan Scarlett taking the temperature of his Texans teammates right now to decide how he votes? Is he voting based on what he thinks of it? In other words, does JJ's tweet have any influence on what Brennan Scarlett is doing?
I would imagine he would talk to JJ. I mean, each guy handles it the way he's going to handle it, but I would imagine he's probably calling around talking to people on the team feel about it.
It's got to be a weird time of year because these guys aren't together.
Right.
This is not a CBA. This is not a vote that's being taken during week 11 of the regular season.
And it's hard too because the player reps simply know a lot more than everybody else, and it's hard to communicate all the information that when those guys get together for their 3-day meetings and whatnot, they're obviously going over a lot of finer details. Then all of a sudden you show up to the sometimes you just feel bad for the player reps because they think hard about this, and they're usually the brighter guys on the team. A lot of times they're special teams players because they have time on their hands. And then they, all of a sudden they show up, and some guy in the back row is like, hold on a minute, looky here. I ain't doing nothing for nobody. So they're giving a certain amount of autonomy. Now, this is another – this is where it's interesting – that the owners want to get this passed right now. And it's not like the owners all got together and all of a sudden just sprung this on the league. Like Ross said, they've been talking to the NFLPA a lot. They've been having multiple meetings. It's been much less contentious, maybe, than it had been last time around. Mm-hmm. It seems like both sides are trying to work together towards a common goal. But when it comes to the whole league voting on it, I would not be comfortable without being able to have a meeting with everybody in one room together. And they're not going to have that opportunity until mini camps or OTAs get started up here in about a month or so.
It's an inconvenient time of year for the. It's easy enough for the owners to. The owners got 32 guys on planes and met in New York yesterday.
Yeah, they get in their private jets and they go.
It's a difference between owning a couple dogs and trying to herd cattle. You know what I'm saying? Like the you know, with the players versus the owners, just logistically trying to get the temperature of the overall constituency. And JJ has now had two strong takes in the last 3 days. He wants DJ Reader to get a new deal. He tweeted that, and he does not like this CBA. I am still waiting for him to support his good friend Jose Altuve and back up Carlos Correa's contention that Jose Altuve did not cheat. You're on the clock, JJ. Payne and Pendergast need support for Jose Altuve. We are Altuve land.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.